right. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We're pumped that you're with us. It has been a beautiful Monday, Tuesday in Youngstown. The sun has been out, 50-some degrees, perfect. How are you doing, Joe?
Good. I didn't get to leave, so you were telling me about something that I did not get to experience. So
I got to experience it on my way here. Okay. With the windows down, though. So you had some fun today with some scammers, I heard.
Yeah.
And so somebody called you or you called them?
So I got a pop-up to happen that tried to, like, rope me into a scam. And the easiest way to do it is to take some regular domains and, like, misspell something. Mm-hmm. And then chances are you're going to end up at a site that says you're infected and you call the number. And so I turned on the camera and I turned on the recording devices and I called these dudes. The first one went pretty typical where, you know, no problem. But the second one, it turned into like a half hour therapy session where I had this guy like really bearing his soul about how he didn't want to do what he was doing and he had no choice. And I ended up feeling like a little bit bad that I beat up on him in the beginning because this guy's living in the middle of Kazakhstan with no other choices. And I'm like bullying up on him. I mean, it's a different thing.
Yeah. I mean, you see people do that, you know, they'll record it for TikTok or whatever it is and have a good time. We have...
Yes.
$800.
$800.
And AirPod Pros in our beautiful red safe here. And you can call in, and I think the number is somewhere around here,
330-595-1600. 330-595-1600 it is.
You can call in. I think you already said we had a couple calls coming in.
Yeah. People aren't messing around. It's almost like there's some bait inside that box.
Yeah. So if you want a chance to put a three-digit code in, you can call, and we'll probably start taking some callers here in the front part of the show.
Want to do it?
Let's do it.
Ready to do it?
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Let's see if we got what it takes. All right, caller, you on?
Oh, blessings.
Hello,
I'm
hello.
Scamming the spammer. Hi. How are you guys?
Good.
Happy. Oh my gosh, I said Saturday. Happy Tuesday.
Tuesday. Yeah. That's good. What's your name?
Sarah.
Oh, hi, Sarah.
Hi. I spammed a spammer in the afternoon, too, and I kind of prayed to God, and I feel bad. Do you want this story in a nutshell or not?
Sure.
They tried to call me to verify my Google listing, I think it was. I don't know. I own a business, so I get lots of calls, lots of cold calls. I told him my last name is very... common, kind of. It's Russell. I told the spammer that my son's name was Kurt. It's not, but Kurt Russell.
Yeah. Nice.
So I had quite a laugh when I told him. I said, "What's your middle name, Kurt?" I don't know. He said, "Alan." I lied and told him that my son's middle name was Fart. F-A-R-T. He believed me, too. He actually wrote it down. F-A-R-T. Yeah.
That's great.
A spammer. I had fun with him for 20 minutes and told him, no, I don't want any Google listing.
So. That's great. Do you have a guess for the box?
My son, Kurt Fart, says his real name is Aiden. It's not Kurt. 611. Two evens and an odd in a couple. sugar, honey, iced tea. So that's the next caller.
Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you so much. Good luck today.
All right.
All right, number 330-595-1600. Should I give the clues away?
Yeah, we should do the clues.
Now, so there's four. There was an unintentional one, like I posted this morning on Facebook. I figured I'd give it away. Now, what you see on the screen here, these are actually the possibilities that are still in the running. All the red ones have been eliminated. All the white ones are still on the table. Now, most of these...
Who did this?
I did.
How do you have time on your hands? I know some of the stuff that you do.
Some o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning, you're like, I want to know something, and I just go do it. So anyway,
we're praying for you.
The first clue is that I got the number for a clock. So on the spreadsheet, anything that couldn't appear in a clock got eliminated. The second one is partners. And the third one is that there's one even and two odd. So again, eliminated from it. Now, I've only started eliminating the ones that were guests during the show. So if you follow the shows, you probably got another 100 of them that could be eliminated. There's only 150 possibilities on this list, down from 1,000. Now, the final inadvertent clue was that somebody asked me during a program if zero was even, and I didn't know how to respond. I didn't know. So that must mean that if I knew even and odd, but I didn't know if zero was an even, you can extrapolate that zeros are probably eliminated. So
that's why
from
all those zeros are
gone. Gone. So that's why only 150 are remaining.
Gotcha, gotcha. So, well, that's wild. You know, when you think of something like this, there's probably some people out there thinking, well, he's probably just spamming us. He wants, you know, whatever. Have you ever fallen victim to a spam call?
Oh, hell. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Like giving money away?
No.
Okay. So,
no, they got me a couple times to a certain point, but never to the point where I lost something.
So, I will shame myself.
Okay, do it.
So, I was probably 6-7 years ago. I had a phone call that came in that said they were from the student loan department. You know where this is going.
Oh, yeah.
And there was an opportunity for me to, you know, consolidate and settle, you know, student loans, and I could do this and I could pay so much less. And I had to, in order, so I had been applying for loan forgiveness, because when you work for a nonprofit for so many years, there's certain criteria and you can apply to have that forgiven. So I had filled out an application for that. So I'd sort of done that, and I don't know how that information got to whoever it was that was calling me. But they were like, well, you know, for you need to fill out this extra form, and it's only, we'll do it for $700, but then all of your loans will be forgiven, et cetera, et cetera. And
you're,
I was
like, sign me up.
I was like, great. Send me the form. And very naive, you know, fill it out, send it. And I get done, and I get this like feeling in the pit of my stomach, like, I think that was wrong. And that day goes by, and I'm checking my loans out online, and then I see I can call my you know, direct student loan provider instead of the, so I called, I think it was Navient or one of those, and said, hey, you know, I just spoke to da 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 da, and they were like, we don't know who that is. And I was like, oh no. So then kudos to Chase. Chase is who we bank with. Chase's fraud department was awesome. Within an hour, they put the money back in my account. They filed a fraud claim. It really was an awesome process with them. They were really, really gracious, and they were, I felt like a doofus, but they were like, you know what, it happens to everybody. And I'm like, well, it doesn't happen to everybody, but it happened to me, and I won't ever forget that. And so, yeah, I got took by the spammers one time.
Yeah. And you're not alone. I mean, we work with people every day that same stuff happens. There was this one guy, probably the worst one. They have the ability to let you suspend like what's reasonable in your mind. And so we had this doctor who got a phone call from a scammer, and they convinced him that there was something wrong with his computer and got him to pay like $200 to make it go away. Well, because he did it once, then they tried it like a month later and he paid it again. It was like six times deep into this that he finally called us and said, hey, I keep paying these people to make this problem go away. Can you fix me, kind of thing? And I'm like, slap my head and, you know, yeah, after $1,000, I mean, yeah, it should be gone by now. But yeah. But they're so good at convincing you.
Yeah. So is it just the confidence man, or is it they're just good at lying, or is there an art to it?
Well,
I mean, because some of them are kind of silly. Like, you always see the silly ones on TikTok, right, and YouTube and stuff
like
that.
They prey on the ignorance. Like, because people don't know a lot about tech, they have to outsource their knowledge to someone who does. And sometimes they misgift. Like, even from a tech standpoint, you'd be surprised at what private information people are so willing to share with me. And I'm like, stop that. You know, I know I'm not going to do anything with it, but don't ever say that stuff to anybody who's not in your family ever again. Because it's just dangerous.
We have another caller.
We do.
All right, let's do it.
Look at you looking, getting all,
I'm learning.
Getting all savvy.
I don't have to outsource my tech to anybody. I'm learning.
Caller, you are on.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I sit at a desk like 40 hours a week and get calls that come into our office.
Yeah.
And the first thing that I've gotten really, really, really good at doing is like Googling the number.
Ah.
Or at least the area code.
Yeah.
So that when they call, I can ask them where they're calling from. And usually if they say, oh, well, I'm calling from Austin, Texas, and it's a Seattle area code.
Oh, yeah, you got them.
Like, a lot of it's common sense, but, I mean, just don't pick up the phone if you don't know the number. It's hard to do it a business.
Sure.
But people, I tell, like, my parents are 77 and 78 years old, and I'm like, listen, unless it says my name on it, and even then, doubt it.
For sure.
Yeah.
Because I could be drunk or something, you know? But, yeah, I just, you really kind of got to be vigilant, man. And you guys, this is a good show you guys got going on.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. Do you want to try the code to win $800 and some AirPod Pros?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Sure. What, let me think. Two odds and an even, right?
Two odds and an even, yep.
613. Give it a shot.
Yeah. That's good. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, no problem. Keep it up, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Awesome.
All right, cool.
Love that. If you want to call in, 330-595-1600. There it is. See, I'm not just a hat rack today.
Yeah. It's good.
Let's go that route. So, yeah. You know, sometimes people want to be deceived. Some people everybody's looking for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, and that's what they prey on. And they use that confidence, and they use there's a certain art to it to be able to pull people into your corner. And, yeah, there is a degree of ignorance that has to be there, because you're not going to – if you know the facts, it doesn't matter how good they are, you're not going to buy in, and that's where you get to have some fun with them.
Right.
And that's the, you know, the videos that we get to see. Do you think there's a level of people out there that they want to be deceived?
Maybe. Or, you know, a lot of the confidence schemes that they have are sort of like multiple stage. And a lot of people are in the first stage and can sense it. But when you start like team, I'll give you an example.
An inception.
Yeah, right. So we were in Las Vegas, Debbie and I, and we got on a public bus. And when we got on the public bus, one of the first guys that when we got on, they were like, hey, I want to let you know that there's some pickpockets in here. Right. And now, I'm paying attention, like, this guy's giving me some good information. But what I found out later is he's in on the team. He's the first level of deception to gain confidence.
They want to see you move your wallet.
Exactly, right? But I didn't realize that. I would have been a complete mark as I go, you know, show him exactly where to go to get my wallet out. And that's the, you know, until you know something like that, you're listening to what he's saying, and I was totally bought in that this was a good guy.
Mm. Wow. Yeah, it's wild. And, you know, deception's one of those things that you don't know until it's over sometimes. But learning to catch it and having the wisdom and the discernment to be able to see through some of those things is tough, especially when it comes to ourselves. The worst type of deception is self-deception. You know, we've all seen those people on American Idol or The Voice or wherever. You know, right. American Idol, you know, my mom told me I could sing. I'm like, mama lied to you. Like, you cannot sing. But they're in their own delusion and they're self-deceived. And I'm sure you've had that. I'm sure you've had people come in and pitch business ideas and you're
all the time.
Well, you know, that's nice and all. Good luck, buddy. You know, you do what you can.
Doing it polite and gracefully.
Yeah, as best you can. I mean, you could Simon Cowell that thing. But
no, I don't have it in me. I feel so bad sometimes.
Yeah, but, you know, but at some level, someone somewhere is going to have the direct conversation with them. One of the things that my father-in-law really taught me, I remember, because I'm a talker and I like to be connected with people and I like to be in that space. And so it didn't matter what people were talking about. I would always try and interject in the conversation, even if I knew nothing about it. And I would pretend.
Oh, you were that guy.
Like I knew stuff about it. And I was like 17, 18, and I was dating his daughter. And I'll never forget, we were in his Acura and we were driving in the car. And he says, Doug, I just want you to know something. Now, he worked as a CIO and he was an executive at you know, companies and stuff and dealt with people hired and fired and all that sort of stuff. And he said, I just want you to know, I would have more respect for you if you entered a conversation like that and just said, I didn't know, you know, when you were asked something, and not try to interject and pretend like you knew something you didn't. And that conversation stuck with me. And from that point on, I tried to shift those things about myself as I, you know, I entered college and some of that, you know, you want to know things and you want to, you know, being the oldest child, I always wanted to be on top and I wanted to be in that space. But I learned that, man, lost credibility. It's better for me to sit at a table and go, you know what? I really don't know anything about it. Today in the meeting I had this afternoon, they were using verbs and you know, different acronyms. And I was like, I need you to explain it to me. I have no idea what that is. And it gives me a credibility at the table, not because I know something, but because I'm willing to say, hey, I don't know this.
Right.
And there's value in that. So self-deception is one of those tough things. How do you get past self-deception?
You got to have someone that's strong, that was willing to put you in check. And hopefully it happens to you early enough in life where you take a, you understand how important that is. Cause a lot of the self-deceivers think they're getting away with it because everybody's too kind to call them on their BS, and they just continue to get confidence in the deception.
Yeah. And some are really good at it, and they turn a whole life, you know, the old adage. And if you're a used car salesman, don't take this the wrong way, but that idea of the used car salesman, you know, they're boosting your confidence, not telling you something, you know, hiding certain things. Now we have things like Carfax and other things, but, you know, in that arena, if you don't know, you could get totally bamboozled and sold a lemon and all that. And so they got a bad rap because they tended to do that, or at least enough of them did that they got a reputation that they did that. If you want to call in, we've had a couple callers already, 330-595-1600 and $800 AirPod Pros. It's in this beautiful red safe. And you got, I guess, a 3-digit code, and Joe's got a whole bunch of them that have already been canceled out. And so it's going to be good. Somebody's going to
win. Can I tell you, like, these, and this isn't a scam, but this is like totally in the business world what happens every freaking day. And so when I first started in radio, I started doing a show, right? And the rep, the person that sort of like was my ally inside the station, would tell me all the time, you've got the highest rating show on this station. And I used to smile inside and think, I got the best. And I sat down with another person that did a show, and they said they had the highest rated show on this station. And we talked to another person, and three of them, they all had. So they were, we were all pretty, and it kept us coming back and doing radio shows because of that feedback.
Yeah. You know, and some of that is, I get it. You know, there's that element. Some people say, you know, fake it till you make it kind of deal. You know, you really, you hear people say that, you know, when you first get out of college, or, you know, you're first entering the workforce, you start your first company, just fake it. You know, you gotta, you know, be more professional or step into that. Like, nobody knows anyway, just do that. And there's an element of truth to that. Like, you know, you're going to have to, show up and wear your daddy's suit, so to speak, for a little bit until you fill it out, until you fit into it. But there's so much more value in, you know, showing up to the table and being honest, an honest broker in that sense. Do you find any value in the adage of fake it till you make it?
To a point. And it's not like a, I don't really ever consider it something that is a lie, right? Or a scam. You know, fake it as in,
it's like dressing for the job that you
want. Yeah, right. You play the role. You get into the mindset. You learn the things. Even though if you're not assembling it all, you go through the motions as if you were that thing already, and then it kind of just falls into place. But people who take the fake it to your make it, and, you know, they have $0 in their bank account and buy the BMW, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of like the inauthentic, the putting up a persona that isn't you at all. I mean, there's a big difference between what your theater is and what you show out to the public. And it's just a dangerous thing to get the public buy into a different person than you really are. Yeah.
It's like the, you know, people that'll rent a, you know, Lamborghini or something for a weekend, take a bunch of pictures, post to their Instagram, or they'll rent like this, you know, bougie and huge house, and they're like, oh, check out my new house. And, you know, they're just putting out an image that is not backed by the facts.
Right. So I guess the acid test on this would be, is if somebody in the future was able to, like, see the real you, and that wasn't a truthful thing. Like, for instance, I early on, before I could speak in front of anyone, I kept telling myself that I can speak in front of everyone, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't like a lie. I really wanted to be able to speak in everyone. So I went up and said, you can do this, you can do this, you can do this, you can do this. And I talked my way, you know, into doing, but it wasn't an inauthentic thing.
No, that's good. So there's a movie that I really like. It's called Kingdom of Heaven. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It takes place in the Crusades. I think Liam Neeson's in it and a couple others. It's pretty good. And basically this guy's a crusader, and on his deathbed he goes back to find his, you know, son that he didn't know, and you know, they go to Jerusalem, all this sort of stuff. It's a cool movie, but they have a line in there, and while he's dying, he's, you know, passing along, you know, the tradition to his son, making his son a crusader knight and protector of Jerusalem. And he says to him, you know, always speak the truth, even if it leads to your death. And I love that line, but I'm going to spin this on you, okay, Joe. Is it ever okay to lie?
Maybe to your wife sometimes when she asks questions. I wouldn't consider it a lie. It would be an avoidance of death. Right? That was not really a lie. If you know that your answer is going to, you know, be the end to someone, it might be okay to answer. But usually I won't answer it. I'll be like, you don't want that answer, right? Yeah. And that's good enough.
Are you sure you want that answer? I often think of, you know, like parents with their kids and stuff. Like sometimes there are questions that they ask that they're not ready for all the information. And so there's some of those things that are important. But like we're a big proponent of this, and we might get some like hate on Reddit later or YouTube. But my wife and I, like we don't do Santa Claus, Easter Bunny, any of that sort of stuff in the sense that you know, if you guys don't behave, you're not going to get any presents.
Same here.
You know, you're going to get cold. Like, we let them know, like, Santa's a fun part of the holiday tradition, but he's fun like the way your cartoons are fun. You know, the Easter Bunny is a weird part of Easter, but apparently there's eggs and other stuff. But the purpose of these is to create some fun atmosphere around a holiday, but they're not the reason for the holiday. And that served us well thus far until my son, as a couple times now, you know, the pastor's kid in kids' church, you know, 6-7 years old. Santa's not real. Oh, buddy, you're killing me.
It's a fear. A fear when you do this that, you know, they're going to use that new information.
At some level, it's something so big for them emotionally. Not that it's going to damage them or scar them, but I want them to know that I've been as an honest broker as I can be with certain things, because it's a, you know, Christmas is an emotional deal for kids. And, you know, some of those kids can take it pretty hard when they get to a certain age. And like all of a sudden it's like, you've lied to me this whole time.
Right.
And I don't want to be that parent. I'm not like super spiritual about it in the sense that like, no Santa, like, no, we talk about Santa and reindeer and we sing Rudolph and everything else, but they just understand that it's fiction. Like your cartoons are fiction. And, but there are some things that are like, you know, they're tough to talk about, you know, a death of a loved one. Like, how do you navigate that with a child and giving them the truth? They can't handle the whole weight of that. There's some things that in life are challenging. So, you know, a parent gets sick, you know, with something terminal like cancer or whatever, like, you know, at some level, depending on the age of your kid, they can only handle a piece of that.
Right.
And so, maybe you're withholding, maybe you're not lying directly, but so there's a tension to that in that sense of, you know, but I think the goal is always to be full of integrity and honesty and regardless of what you do.
My wife said, and I knew this was coming, she said, what? Never to your wife. And I knew as soon as those words came out of my mouth that I was a dead man.
Yeah.
And
I sat back and I was like, Joe, put down the shovel. Put down the shovel. When you find yourself in a hole, stop digging.
Yes. So I retract. I don't know if it's capable of retracting that statement, but I officially...
We'll edit it out later. Hey, if the newspapers can go in and edit op-eds, you know, weeks later to make them more friendly to a political party. You know. Sorry. That was a little bit of a dig there.
Well, I set up this little gate with my son where there's some stuff I don't really want him to know until he's older. But if he runs across the information, I say, I do not want to tell you this until you're a little bit older. But if you need to know right now, I will absolutely. And then every time he's walked up to that gate, he says, yeah, it's cool if I know this later. I'm like, thank you, God, for giving me that pass. You know,
and there's even those moments. So like Graham has an infection right by his cuticle. And it was pretty rough this morning. We woke up. We actually had to take him to the doctors, and they had to cut it open and push it out, and you know, a little rough. And he's panicked about it. Am I going to lose my finger? Am I going to die? Like, I mean, he is worried about this thing. So the doctor does that. It was a lot of pain, but he came home. He's happy, jovial, running around. But the doc told my wife, hey, you're probably going to have to pop this thing again. And I'm like, so I'm trying to prep him. I'm like, hey, I need to look at your finger before I go to podcast. You know, I need to, come here, buddy. Let me check it out. And my wife goes, yeah, get in the other room. Daddy needs to pop it. And I'm like, then he starts freaking out. I'm like, I had him. I didn't give him all the information. I steered him to the table. And I'm holding his finger. And so finally, he was so worked up. I looked at him and I said, Graham, I said, here's the thing. And I said, I'm not going to lie to you. This is going to hurt. And I was like, but if we don't do this, and I said, this is the truth that you haven't been told. An infection that's not taken care of could cause you to lose your whole finger. And so we're going to give you the antibiotic, like the doctor said, but daddy has to get what's bad out. And it was amazing because in that moment, I leveled with him. This is going to hurt, but I don't want you to lose your finger. There's a reason we're going through this pain. Yep. And he was still whimpering, but the hysterics stopped in that moment. And you could watch him kind of do the math. I don't want to lose my finger. And then he asked me, am I going to die? I'm like, you are not going to die. I was like, but we have to get the bad stuff out. And so those are those fine lines we walk as parents and stuff. You know, is there ever a time in your life in marketing that you feel it's okay to stretch the truth a little bit, to embellish? You know, some people say, you know, they'll be hyperbolic in the way that they do certain things. And they'll say, oh, you know, that was really dishonest, right? You never want to bait and switch somebody. But sometimes, you know, do you ever do that?
No, never. And I think what happens is you get that Britney Spears effect where if you do it and it's successful, then more people are going to do it. And you make this mad rush that the deception is more successful than the truth. And so I don't want to be a part of that problem that makes everything else worse, because once that happens, I don't want to play anymore.
Right. And then reputation's out the window.
Absolutely. It's just not worth it.
So no one has guessed the code right. Brandon asked if anybody had guessed the code right.
And your wife said, how do we know what's already been guessed? And I have a spreadsheet where I took the time.
But you have to go back and watch all of our shows.
You do. And you can do this yourself, or I can sell you this spreadsheet for $20 a view. Yeah. So if anybody's interested in seeing what's been eliminated, $20 a view, nice. And it's all yours. I'll share it. You'll have about 30 minutes to look at it. Make some copies if you want, and then I'll remove it. That's a 30-minute license.
That's good. You know, it looks like we have another caller on the line. And so if you want to call in right now, you can call in 330-595-1600. And you can guess what is in our red safe is $800 AirPod Pros. And we need a 3-digit code. And there are a bunch of clues that Joe's already shared on the show.
That's it. All right, caller.
Hi.
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 Hold on. Seagram. My name is Sarah. I did call in earlier, but I was listening to Pastor Doug. I got a nudge to call in.
Awesome.
About, I guess, little white lies in your kids.
Yeah.
With something serious like death and dying.
Yeah.
That's a big one, right?
Yeah, it's tough.
Over COVID, even being a stay-at-home educator, my son lost his grandfather, and I'm not laughing. It was in 2 days, lost his grandfather and then his other grandfather on my ex's side.
Wow.
And personally, knowing one of the gentlemen for 25 years, I hit my knees and prayed. I said, oh my gosh, how do I tell my son this?
Yeah.
So I took God's nudge to pray.
Yeah.
I did hit my knees. I asked him, God, how do I explain this to my then 12-year-old? And God is, you both know, he answers your prayers and he gives you words that you wouldn't even know come out of your mouth.
Yep.
And looking back, you say, thank you, God, holy, thank you for giving me that Bible verse, that patience. And then even, the wisdom to know what to say to a 12-year-old. Yeah, he'll tell you.
Yeah. But, absolutely. It's super
God
challenging. The when my dad passed and my father-in-law, it was super challenging because my kids were, I think the oldest was 6-7 at the time, and youngest was baby. So they had all different levels of understanding, and how do you begin to address that with them? And it was quite a challenge for my wife and I. But you're absolutely right. In those moments, you get help, and when you pray like that, God really shows up and delivers. My dad often said his mom died when I was 3, And I don't remember this story. I remember the story everyone told me about the story, so I'm not claiming to have a memory of this at 3 years old. But according to my mom and my dad, he was playing music in his study. My dad played electric guitar. And, you know, I went into the room to see what was going on, and he had just gotten the news, you know, that morning or the day before that his mom had passed, and my goldfish had just died. And so my dad went with the wisdom of, you know, buddy, just like your goldfish just died, you know, grandma just died. And supposedly I said, did they flush grandma down the toilet as well? And that was the brevity and the humor that my dad needed in that moment. And I'm told that that's what transpired. I don't remember that myself, but that's what I hear. And so those moments are very delicate, but God knows.
All right, caller, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, it's Brandon. How you doing?
Good. Hey, Mr. Berg, what's going on?
I'm calling a guest on this lockbox deal.
Yeah.
You think you can win it?
You know, I'm feeling pretty good about it.
All right.
All right. Do you want to go over the parameters one
Brandon,
more time?
Brandon, do you need the clues, or are you pretty versed in it?
He needs the code. Yeah. The clues. Do we need the clues?
I'll take the code, but sure, go with the clues.
All right. The clues are, I got the number from a clock, partners,
right,
and one even, two odd, and the invertent that there's probably not a zero in the code.
That changes. Okay, I'm going to go with 612.
Sorry, bro.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks for calling in, man.
Yep, bye.
We have another caller. We have 1, 2, yeah.
All right, caller, you on there?
Oh, hey, honey.
Oh, it's my wife. Oh. She wants to win. Look at that.
Okay, good.
How are you, babe?
I haven't called in yet. I haven't listened to anything about the codes or stuff, so I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to call.
Give her the clues real quick.
All right, the clues are that I got the number from a clock, partners, and one even, two odd, and the number probably doesn't have a zero in it. And why did Sam Reed Venmo me $20? What's that for?
Yo, I will gladly take you up on that deal. Gladly. So there is no zero, because I thought that there was I heard a rumor that there was a possibility of a zero.
Joe said there were two even, two odd. And then I said, well, a zero, an even, or an odd. And we both said we didn't know. So the conclusion is it doesn't involve a zero.
Yeah, I'm just sharing that story because it might lead you to some more information. That's all. Or it might not. It might be a red herring. Who knows?
So one even, two odd.
One even, two odd.
One even, two odd. All right, I'm going to go with 7, 2, 3.
Sorry, babe.
Ooh, I need new AirPods.
Love you.
All right, love you. Bye.
All right, that's cool.
It's been fun.
Here's the thing: when my son and your wife, I'm like hoping the whole time that they don't win.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't want anybody to say fix, and then when they don't win, I'm like, see, authentic baby, right? Because
it's like Mother's Day. We gave away 3 baskets, and my wife's going, can I get a number to win? I'm like, no. I was like, if we're up there giving the baskets away, I'm like, oh, honey, here, you won. Which one do you want? Like, I was like, you can't win.
No.
And Natalie on staff was like, Sam, here, take a number. You can totally win. And I'm like, please, God, don't let her win.
Yeah. But, you know, I make the rules, so I guess I could if I wanted to have somebody win, but I'm just not that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but no, that's good. Oh, Brandon said he thought there was a zero as well. There could be. We just had the conversation that when Joe talked about even and odd numbers, we were uncertain as to whether zero was a even
number. Yeah, as a clue, though, it was not part of the original how I was going to release clues. But there is a spreadsheet that has every possibility that has a zero already marked out with a red. So that might be another part of that, that there's no zero in this. Maybe not. Or maybe. I don't know.
Oh, that's awesome. Let's do this. How do you repair a reputation? So we've talked about scammers. We've talked about honesty. We talked about you know, when is it okay to lie? What if you have a reputation for bullcrap? You just like, that's your reputation in your industry. That's your, how do you begin to repair that reputation? How do you begin to earn trust again? How do you begin, because everybody's going to look at you and be like, oh boy, here we go again.
Right.
Like, how do you begin to step into that and do it right?
Yeah. And so there's, you know, I was a little bit of a storyteller when I was a kid, and mm-hmm. it's one of the most embarrassing things about me is there are people that know that about me. Mm-hmm. And now I pride myself on how the truthfulness always flows yeah. out. And I'm thinking in second grade, I'm telling people that, you know, a tornado went through in Niles. Right. And the teacher said, did anybody see it? And I was like, yeah, I saw it. It went through my backyard. Right. I was like, so stupid.
I was riding my bike to chase it down.
Right. Right. And so like, I'm embarrassed that that's where I came from, but I think, you know, the first step though is that the people that you care about are probably the first and never really, no. I mean, they'll forgive you, but they'll never really forgive you. Like right, they'll always right. know in their heart that you have that in you, even yeah. is a lot of time, but time heals it. Mm-hmm. But I think like falling on the sword and saying, you know, just coming clean about what it yeah. is. And you got to approach it like a physical affliction. Like it was a disease that you once had that now yeah, you yeah. figured out what caused it and killed the cause of the disease. And now give me a chance to always prove to you that I'm not that disease ridden person anymore.
What do you think the reasons are for people to lie?
I mean, it's I always see it when people are put in a position where the truth means that what they've built their life on goes away.
Cost their ego.
Yeah, that's the main consequence. And when yeah. whenever that happens, it's always a lie. No matter how good of a person they are, they always go over the road that time.
Yeah, I definitely think that most people, when ego's on the line, it's interesting. When ego's on the line, that's where we'll lie to get ourselves out of it. And we may escape once. We may escape twice, but some point, somewhere, someone's going to call that, and it's going to lower you and destroy everything that you thought was there ego-wise. Where, if you came out with the truth and owned it and bit the bullet, your ego actually gets increased because people go, you know what, I hate that that's true about him, or I hate that that happened, or I hate that he did that, but at least he owned it. Like, that's there's right. almost an element to that where, you know, I tell my kids all the time, you know, this will go better for you if you fess up than if I have to dig for the truth. So if you come in and, hey, you know what, Graham, I punched him in the face, you know, like they'll just come in the room and say it because they know, hey, this is going to go better for you if you own it.
But if you discover it without being told, then it's game yes. over because you didn't do it on those terms.
Concealing it, and I don't do concealing. I don't do any of that stuff in my house. And so, you know, for the kids, I am trying to train them like, hey, if you own it, you know what? I mean, I like that you did it. I may think you need to do something different next time. But if you're going to own it, I can have a conversation about that. I can train with that. If you're going to conceal it and you're going to try and keep it from me, it's over.
Well, and here's the other thing, too. The other side of that is when people who don't extend grace to people who have gummed up, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's been a part of this. There's a flavor of everything that yeah, you've been a part of.
True.
And it's one of those things where I picture, you know, some of the mistakes that I've made in the past. If someone, you know, really planted it on me, you could probably, you know, end me pretty good.
Yeah.
So I offer that grace forward. If someone wrongs me in that kind of way, how would I want, you know, them to, or how would I want to be treated in that way?
Well, and I think grace goes a long way. You know, when we talk about honesty and reputation and ego, grace is one of those things that, you know, I want people to treat me. I want to give them the same grace that I want extended
exactly.
to me.
That's exactly
and,
right.
And there's plenty of times where I've inserted my foot into my mouth. There's plenty of times where I went left and I should have went right, or I went right and should have went left. And, you know, if you're keeping the scorecard, I'm in trouble. So I really think that, you know, approaching life with grace. And I think, honestly, that's probably the biggest issue I have with cancel culture right now is it literally pulls all the mercy, grace, and redemption out of the culture. Like, nobody gets to have a comeback story yep. anymore. Because you made two tweets in 2006, you know, in a drunken binge at college, and now you can't ever do anything else because we're going to cancel you. Can't be on that
but
show.
But literally everybody on the planet, if it gets focused on you, you're exactly. done. Nobody exactly. escapes from this.
I have said to more of my pastor friends, do you guys think we'd be in ministry if Facebook existed when we were in high school? Like, or some of those things, like, you know, you did goofy things, like,
right.
you said things, and you were in places, like, and thank God for mercy and grace and second chances and the opportunity for redemption. And I think that's one of the things that I really dislike about the cancel culture, because it removes that as even an option. Like, you've taken a wrong position, you're dead to everybody.
Right.
And that's just, you know, I think it's really atrocious.
And when I was learning about credit and building credit and, you know, kind of like redeeming yourself from having a bad credit history, what I found is the mathematics was actually better for people who hit the bottom and they created better credit mm-hmm. than if you had never had done that before. And there was like a moral in that story, and it had nothing to do with the actual mathematics of credit, but having gone through that, the strength that you have and when what you're willing to do to redeem yourself is what made you stronger than the other person. So we weren't talking about credit anymore at a certain point, you know?
Yeah. I think Gary Vee does a thing on, you know, those people that have been born, everybody says, oh, you know, you were born into this, you know, you got your daddy's money. Like, everybody assumes that people that are well off or whatever. And he goes, I actually think that's a disadvantage for people to be born into money or born into advantage or born. He's like, I'd rather be born with nothing, because then you get that chip on your shoulder and you work harder.
Exactly.
And you earn certain things. And he does that in a number of different rants on Instagram or wherever. And I find that to be very, very true. Obviously, there's outliers in every rule, if that makes sense. But I find for the most part to be very, very true. That's why, you know, you have, you know, American students that have every advantage in the world that will go to a free public school where they can learn to read, have every advantage at their fingertips, and complain about it, you know, piss and moan their way through, right, and, you know, barely apply themselves. And then you'll have immigrant children that will come in and realize this is my golden ticket, and they will work extra hours, right, they'll work their fingers to the bone, and they will outpace and out work all of you know, the other students. And I think of some of my friends from high school that you know, were first generation immigrant, were doing English as a second language, they were coming for extra classes, and now you know, if I was in their industry, I'd be working for them, you know, because they applied themselves in a way that a lot of my friends are like, ah, whatever, it's just school, you know, I'm here. And you don't have that drive when you don't have that chip on your shoulder usually.
Right. And let's deal with some truths here. So through the history, all of history, there isn't anyone who is irredeemable, right? So no matter what 100%. You've done, you can come back from it no matter what. So the process then would be that
the only way you don't come back is you quit.
Yeah. Right.
And you kill yourself or you die.
Yeah. I mean the only way literally you come back. If you go to a person before they're gunning at you, there is more forgiveness in making first approach, even though you don't have the courage to be able to do it. If you can say, I did it wrong, and you come up and tell on yourself, I've seen more forgiveness in that moment than anything else.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I believe, and my practice has been, in my home, with my wife, is like, hey, if I'm going to be the leader of my house, if I'm going to lead my relationship, I'm going to lead my marriage, I'm going to do this, well, then I have to own stuff. And there are times where sometimes I don't think the decision is right, or I'm frustrated with something, and I'm going to step in and I'm going to own it, because I'm the leader, and I allowed this to happen under my roof, or I allowed this culture to be set. It's not the employee's fault. It's not my kid's fault. If I'm the leader in the home, I've allowed the conditions to be made. And so I'm going to own that, and we're going to change the conditions so that we get a different outcome.
Absolutely.
And I think that, you know, sometimes I find myself, it causes me to be the first one to step up and say, you know what, I'm sorry. And there've been times where, you know, my wife and I've had, you know, a disagreement. We don't do that often. But when we do, I always want to be the first to apologize. I always want to be the first to own it. And I always want to be the first to step in and say, all right, what can I do to change the outcome? And I think that's what leaders do. What toddlers do is what a lot of guys do, is like, well, it's all your fault and da-da-da, and blame everybody else. But I gain more respect for my wife, for my kids. There are times I've apologized to my 3, 4, 5, 6-year-olds where I'll pull them aside and say, you know what, Daddy shouldn't have handled it that way. Sorry, I yelled at you, or, you know, I'm sorry, I overreacted for that. You were right to do that, and I shouldn't have done that. And in the grand scheme of things, most people are like, well, does it really matter? Yeah, it does, because I'm setting an example for them. Like, I have to own my behavior too. I'm asking you to own yours. And so, yeah, just because I had a bad day or I was tired and didn't get good sleep doesn't give me the right to step in and over-respond to something you did.
All right, so let's talk about that scammer that I talked to you a little bit earlier. Okay, so he bared
redemption. You're gonna circle back on this.
He bared his soul.
Yeah.
He said, "Listen, I'm in the middle of Kazakhstan, right? There's no other jobs. I can't feed my family if I don't take advantage of other people, and I'm only doing it in just the amounts that I need to be able to, put food on the table. I feel bad that I'm doing it, but it's easy for me to say from over here, don't do that, right? Yeah, Go starve, not be able to, feed your family. So, if it's true that there's not other option, like theft is your only thing to survive, can you begrudge a person for surviving when you're living in the ivory tower, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting question.
And same thing with even lying. If someone lies to survive is different than as a convenience or an escape mechanism. So it's tough to even judge a person that's wronging you if they feel like it's their only option.
Yeah.
But and this is my only complaint. I probably won't say this ever again because it'll get me in trouble. But I hate the secular society. I hate what it does. I hate where it's going. I hate that there's not a balance in there. Yeah. And it's this race for everyone is selfishness and taking advantage of everyone else. Yep. And I don't think anybody's going to realize it until literally the guy that is going to steal from you doesn't feel bad about it at all. This guy actually felt bad about it. He had a conscience, right? What happens when half the people don't have a conscience anymore and it's okay to rape, pillage, steal, and do whatever to get by?
Yeah.
That was a little rant, sorry.
That's okay. The Bible says there it is. it's a searing of the conscience. Like when you go against natural law, when you go against biblical law, there's certain things that get seared on you and you don't feel as bad the second time or the third time or the fifth time. And that's why it's so important. The Bible has this, teaches us about repentance. It's so important that we do that, not just in where I say I'm sorry to my kids and hey, I'm going to alter my behavior. Why am I doing that? I want to keep my heart soft with my kids. I want to keep that relational current open. I want to keep that space for them to feel safe with me. But I also am training them that, hey, sometimes you got to turn and go in the other direction. Just because you did that doesn't mean you can't flip around. And so when you talk about that, when there's no sense of remorse, when there's no sense of redemption, when there's no sense of, well, why do I care? Why should I turn? And then you do it again and again and again, and you sear the conscience, and it's over at that point.
I think this conversation affected me more than I wanted it to. With Mr. Scammer, I just went in with all rage and thinking that I was going to unseat this guy. And when he went soft in my hand, I was just like, "Oh, this is a different thing."
Yeah, the moments where you come in with one expectation and then you receive something you weren't expecting are a lot of times those powerful moments where God's trying to shape something and teach something to you where you're like, this is not what I thought. Thought I was going to expose his lies and his greed and everything else. And, and you very much got an Aladdin moment where, I steal to eat, man. Like, what do you want me to do? You have a certain heart for that in that space. But I would think, and I know you, my mindset always goes, well, how do we provide a way for them to do honest work?
Right.
How do we provide space? How do we provide a job? How do we provide career paths? How do we provide a way for them to eat? One of the cool places that I go every time I'm in Israel is this place called Mir Panin. It means Abraham's bread, and it's basically a food place where people can come and get a free meal. They have to register, but they actually give them these faux debit cards and they come in and they sit down. It's just like a restaurant. And now, I don't know if they bring them a menu or not, but it appears that way. And we've been there for a couple different things, but they really only cook a handful of things. And then you get to have a meal. Someone brings it to you and you sit there and, you have people like, not many left, but, they had some pictures of Holocaust survivors that were so poor they couldn't afford to eat, but they could come to this place like a restaurant and sit down with their family, and then they bring them a fake bill, and they can put their card on it and feel the dignity of a meal instead of just the typical soup kitchen or whatever. I always thought that was a fascinating kind of way to handle some of that stuff, but to provide, those avenues for that, not just a handout, but a real way to restore dignity and help people through is kind of fun.
Well, the cynical brain really kicked in because, the gears were turned. I'm like, okay, well, this dude needs help. I could totally help him. I'm like, well, I'd have to expose that I am over here. And I'm like, maybe the scammer is trying to make me do that so they can get information. And I was like, I can't do anything. I'm stuck here, not being able to help, being under a disguise of that I'm not even my true self here. So it was a weird scenario.
you know, those first scams that I remember coming out were the email scams, you know, like some Zimbabwean prince had an inheritance, you know, or somebody in, you know, wherever, Europe, you know, we have someone in your family, you know, 15 times removed, has left an inheritance. There's no one left to get it but you. You just need to send me $5,000 and I will send you 1.8 euro, million euros.
Wow, like a security fee. That's all we need. $5,000.
People fell for it left and right.
Yeah.
You know, because, and some of that is we bought into the get rich quick scheme. Yeah, and right. So everyone wants to win the lottery. And, you know, somebody gets that email and they go, this is it. This is my moment. And, you know, you end up getting bamboozled for like $5,000.
Yep. Okay. Let's next week, right?
Yeah. We will be here, not next week, Thursday, 2 days. We're going to have a guest on with us, Kathy Cottrell. She is a Mary Kay extraordinaire and a business vet. And we're going to talk life, leadership, people development, all those things with Kathy this Thursday. So we'll see you back here Thursday, 6 o'clock.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.